most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. It's Tuesday, November 27th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us here at Normal. Help us end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. And starting tomorrow here on the Audio Stash, we're going to get the rundown on the happenings at the Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam last week. The official winner, well, we'll hear more about it, but it was Barney's Breakfast Bar, sweeping a lot of the awards this year. We're going to speak with Rick Cusick and Danny Danko of High Times Magazine tomorrow and Thursday here on the program. Talk about what happened over there at the 20th Annual Cannabis Cup. It sure was a well-attended event this year, well-stocked with vendors at the expos and a lot of coffee shops participating this year. So again, Rick Cusick and Danny Danko here on the program tomorrow and Thursday talking about the Cannabis Cup. Thursday and Friday this week, we're going to speak with Danielle Schumacher and Richard Lee from Oaksterdam University. This is a new project out in Oakland, California, training people to work in the cannabis industry. It's a very strict course curriculum. It includes a lot about politics and legal issues, as well as how to start up your own business and work specifically in the cannabis industry. So Thursday and Friday, we'll speak with Danielle Schumacher and Richard Lee from Oaksterdam University. We'll have links to all that information later this week as well. Also tomorrow, we've got a new segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, our regular Wednesday cannabis science segment. Mitch and I are going to talk about cannabis tinctures tomorrow. We've covered a lot of topics, but we haven't covered cannabis tinctures, so we're going to talk about that in our cannabis science segment here in the Audio Stash tomorrow. On the program today, we're getting everyone ready to head down to the Big Easy. Next week in New Orleans is the Drug Policy Alliance Conference. Also at the same time is the Students for Sensible Drug Policy Conference. So in the program today, we're going to hear from Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance, speaking about New Mexico's medical marijuana reform. This is audio from the 2007 Normal Conference that took place last month in Los Angeles. Also from the Normal Conference, we'll hear Chris Crane, the director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, speaking on the Activist Toolbox panel. We also got a chance to interview Chris there at the conference, so we'll play both his panel presentation and his interview here today on the Audio Stash. We've got links to Students for Sensible Drug Policy and the Drug Policy Alliance right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Let's get things started with this presentation by Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance. Here he is speaking at the 2007 Normal Conference on the Legislative Reform Panel. The entire panel is available for download on the Normal Events podcast. Links to that up at normalaudiostash.com.
What I want to do is just sort of put the New Mexico thing into a broader context and into the, in terms of my involvement, the involvement of Drug Policy Alliance, its predecessor organizations on medical marijuana. And I think most of you are aware that, that for me and for DPA, for Drug Policy Alliance, we've been involved in this issue essentially for two reasons. The first is because we see the persecution and prosecution of people who use marijuana for medicinal purposes as really the most egregious aspect of the war on marijuana. That if anybody deserves not to be punished, it's people really using it for medicine. Now, on the other hand, we also believe nobody should be punished for using this sort of stuff, and we think that ultimately we need to move in the direction of making this stuff legal writ large. And our hope has been that by working on medical marijuana, not only would we help people who are using it for medicine, but ultimately would help move and change public opinion so that we can ultimately move towards broader legalization. And it's very hard to say whether or not that second objective has been achieved. We think there's some indications it is actually opening it up, it is changing the imagery of marijuana, but on the other hand, we see marijuana arrest rates going, you know, every year, a new record of the number of people getting busted. So it's hard to evaluate our success or failure on that second score right now. Now, New Mexico came in us for a context. You know, the first context was the medical marijuana initiatives of the 90s. You know, here was 1996, California, Dennis Perone, this quixotic initiative, and I had just started Linda Smith Center. There's an opportunity to get behind it, turn this quixotic initiative into a real thing, get the big money, the Soros, the Lewis, the Sperling, the George Zimmer behind it, get a professional campaign, and win it. And win it we did with a wide open initiative, as you all know right here. Then the challenge was, what do we do next? Go back in 98, 99, 2000, and let's try to sweep the country, at least sweep the West with this stuff, right? So we went to Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Nevada, and Maine, in all of these cases, with new medical marijuana ballot initiatives. And we hoped that we could win these all, and in fact, we did win them all. It wasn't easy. You know, Nevada, by constitution, got to win it twice. In Colorado, the Secretary of State screwed us in 98, and people actually voted for it. It was on the ballot. They won. But we won, but then the thing didn't count, and then she died. And then we came back and won it in 2000. You know, in Maine, the bad weather kept us from getting it on the ballot in 98. We came back in 99 and won it. So we won this whole bunch, but we were early on, you know, and we weren't exactly sure what we were doing. And we figured if we did the kind of wide-open California initiative, we'd be shot down. So we tried to figure out that balance, the balance between what was as far as we could push the envelope on the one hand, and on the other hand, what could make us secure that we were going to win it? And also, what did we feel that would make us confident we would win it, but what were the local activists saying, push the envelope, push the envelope? Well, we came up with what we came up with. You know, in Oregon, Alaska, they were pretty good initiatives. Colorado, you know, not as strong as we would have liked. In Washington State, the local our local partner, Dr. Rob Killian, was really didn't want that patient ID thing in there. He was worried about confidentiality issues, so we didn't put that into the Washington State one. I think in retrospect, he now says he wishes we did because we've seen there have not really been the problems with confidentiality in the other states. But we did this whole bunch, and then by the time we got to 2000, I had come to the conclusion, and to some extent this was a variety of factors, was also where the major funders' heads were at, was we've made our point with the initiatives. Now let's focus on implementation in Washington, and let's focus on trying to fight this through the state legislative process. That let's do this, for many of the reasons that Allison just described, because when you get it through the state legislative process, you go through a protracted and oftentimes agonizing process of educating the legislators and generating not just those 2 weeks of media or maybe a few months, but constant, over and over, the public education that happens. Was that the right decision, by the way? I don't know. You know, I think so, and I know that the resources to keep doing lots more initiatives wasn't necessarily there, but we did what we did, and we started doing it. Now, you all know Gary Johnson in late 99, the Republican governor of New Mexico, he pops out and he goes, let's legalize. And people go, no. You know, and we got to him at that point. He said, look, you know, Governor Johnson, how about talking about legalization of marijuana on the one hand and harm reduction with the other drugs? And he goes, okay, I can get around that. And then let's start moving some bills, including on medical marijuana and treatment instead of incarceration and asset forfeiture reform and a whole range of other incrementalist bills where we know public opinion is on our side. And I'll tell you, New Mexico, you talk about the heartbreak of legislative effort. We've done bills there, what is it, five times since 2000, 2001. I can't even remember anymore what year was which. What I remember is where I was standing when the director of New Mexico DPA called me, sobbing in tears, to saying, I can't believe the legislature didn't do it. We got it in 2001 through both houses, and they couldn't just agree on a final bill to reconcile. We got it through other houses. Then Richardson comes in, and Richardson says he doesn't want to deal with this for his first couple of years because it's too linked with Gary Johnson, the Republican. And then we come in 2005, and we get so close. And then 2006, and then 2007. And every year you're dealing with some other idiosyncratic objection. This legislator won't tolerate that, and this one doesn't want this piece. And meanwhile, there's some topical marijuana bill that some legislator has. I don't know what that's about. You know, but I mean, you're always dealing, as Alice and others have described, with this crazy process, you know, that you just have to deal with. In 2007, we're moving forward on this thing. You know, in the Senate, I mean, we win it. We get 80% of the votes. We have a majority of Republicans. We're sweeping through legislative committees with almost no dissent. But in the House, we got a major problem. The head of the Speaker of the House, Ben Lujan, is dead set against this thing. And the governor reassures us we've been working on the governor. We got people working on him who have worked on his campaigns. You know, he's aware, of course, and it doesn't hurt that he knows that people like George Soros and Peter Lewis and a lot of others who are major contributors to the Democratic Party are also interested in this issue. That helps, right? So Richardson, he doesn't have this gut feel for the issue, but he knows this is a good thing to do. You know, and we're sort of reassured that with a governor on our side, we can get through both houses. Lujan, we'll deal with Lujan. We got the votes. And then I think it was like March 9th or March 10th. We had the votes going through the House. Lujan strong-armed some people. It goes down. But this time what happens when it went down, and the day after, the director, Rena Schapansky, our remarkable director, calls me in tears. Her phone rings the next morning, and it's Governor Richardson. And he's going, what the hell happened? Can you get to my office right now? And Rena walks into his office, and she goes, Governor, here's what happened. And here's what Lujan did. And here's who we had commitments from, and here's who got twisted. And Richardson goes, I want it. I'm going to fix this. Well, he fixed it. The bill's dead. Once the bill's been dead and defeated, I mean, but there was that wacky little topical marijuana thing. Well, it turns out you can take our bill and tape it onto that one and put the thing back through again. And Richardson canceled his travel plans, made the calls. We have one of my members of my board of directors, Jim Gollin, who also is the chair of the Rainforest Action Network. He hit the ground. He started doing it. And having a spectacular advocate and lobbyist working with, an amazing patient network. And then, of course, we also had Erin Armstrong, who was working for DPA, a beautiful young woman. Her mother had been a high level in the New Mexico Department of Health. And she's living with cancer. And she's in her 20s. And she becomes a kind of moral voice for this thing, a real moral voice. You know, when that bill finally got enacted, the new bill is called the Lynn Pearson, named after the original medical marijuana bill back from the 70s, and Erin. It's the first time we have a bill named after a DPA employee, you know, which made us, but it was that combination of patience and lobbying and media and board members and money and politics and the whole thing coming together. I'm not going to get into all the details of the bills. You know, you can look it up on the website on drugpolicy.org or our local New Mexico site, which is called improvenewmexico.org. There's a couple pager right there. The thing that was most interesting about the bill, I mean, we put in some things, for example, a medical advisory board so that you have the 7 medical conditions we could get through the legislature, but now every 6 months this medical advisory board, which is fairly sympathetic, will consider petitions for new conditions to be added. You know, there's all, you know, the number of plants, et cetera, you can find the details online. What was interesting, though, was we did put in something that hasn't been in any of the other successful bills, and that was one to authorize the state to move forward on medical marijuana production and distribution.
That was Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance, speaking at the 2007 Normal Conference Just about 5 weeks ago in Los Angeles, California, he was speaking on the Legislative Reform Panel. That entire panel audio is available for download on the Normal Events podcast. You can link up to it at normalaudiostash.com or norml.org/podcast. You can also view video of that entire legislative panel up on YouTube. We have links to that today as well. And you can purchase DVDs. We'll have all those links right up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Chris Crane at the 2007 Normal Conference.
What's up, y'all? This is Soja, and you are right now listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Big up yourself.
Next up today in our prep for New Orleans next week is the director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, Chris Crane. Here he is speaking on the Activist Toolbox panel. This was a breakout panel on the first day of the Normal Conference in Los Angeles. We also got a chance to interview with Chris. We'll hear that after his panel presentation. Again, here's Chris Crane, the director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. We have links to their website at normalaudiostash.com. And you can download this entire Activist Toolbox panel right up on the Normal Events podcast. We have links to that on our website as well.
Thank you, Josh. One thing Josh didn't mention is that the photo you all see today in the Great Hall is a photo from the Austin Freedom Fest held just last year, raised money for both WAM, Normal, and MPP, $10,000 in Normal, and I just think that's awesome. So, Josh. All right, next up we have Chris Crane, obviously director of SSDP and a legend in his own right among college campuses.
I think that just comes from doing this for too long. Well, I want to thank everyone for being here. I know we don't have a whole lot of time, which is all right, because I'm a pretty fast talker, so I'll try and get through this as quickly as possible. I do want to start out, first of all, for those of you who don't know me, I worked at Normal for about 6 years. I was the chapter coordinator there and associate director, essentially the job that Ron currently is in, and was the point person for all of these conferences for about 6 years. I was sort of the point person for the Normal conferences. Anything went wrong, I was the person that people went to, and, you know, where's this or where's that, or this is broken, or, the, you know, that EV screwed up or not. It's about the most thankless job that you could possibly ask for, so I'd like to personally thank Ron for the job that he's done here. It's very tough, and you've done a terrific job with it. So Ron's asked me to speak today about what I see as the role of students in marijuana law reform or drug policy reform. I am the executive director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. We're the largest student-based organization working to find alternatives to what we consider current failed drug war policies. We do work on policies beyond just marijuana law reform, but I think the lessons here are fairly applicable. And so what I want to lay out is essentially the role that I see for students and essentially the vision that I brought to SSDP when I took over the organization over a year and a half ago, and what we've been trying to do with SSDP. And I see this as essentially threefold, and I'll go through all three of these as the outline for my speech. Number one is essentially filling, and I think SSDP really filled a very needed niche in drug policy reform. There are a number of groups that I would consider sort of niche groups in drug policy reform, and I think that's very necessary. There really was, there never was up until 1998 an organized student movement. There were normal chapters, but as I could attest to, or Ron could attest to, you know, the person in charge of dealing with the normal chapters also has to organize conferences and update the website and, you know, organize college chapters, regular chapters, and a whole host of other jobs. And so there never was a group that was dedicated to just organizing students, and I think that SSDP came in and sort of filled that void. I think another, you know, LEAP, for example, filled a very necessary void of former law enforcement who were able to speak out and add that form of credibility. I think there are some voids that haven't been filled yet, and one that I think about that I certainly couldn't do much with myself is a real organized parents movement in for marijuana law reform. There isn't really a parents group out there, and I think that's one of the strongest components of the anti-drug movement, and I think we need to counter with our own. But that's so anyway, going back to a sort of threefold idea for what I think students or the role of students are in this movement. Number one is sort of providing leadership and sort of in filling that niche, providing leadership on issues in the drug law in drug policy reform or in drug policy that impact young people and students. That's where we're most credible. Just like Normal, I think is very credible when talking about the interests of marijuana smokers. SSDP and the student movement is particularly credible when dealing with student and youth issues. So that's number one. Number two is essentially providing foot soldiers, for lack of a better term, for other drug policy organizations in this movement. Essentially providing students who are able to do work, who can get involved in, you know, whether it's envelope stuffing or collecting signatures or going door to door or whatever it is, we can provide the manpower for those types of resources. And third is essentially training the next generation of drug policy reformers. In the way that we've tried to do that at SSDP, and I'll get into this in a minute here, is essentially using campus policy change as a training ground for local, state, and national policy change. So the first point is essentially that I think the students can provide is providing leadership on youth drug policy issues, and that's something that we do on the national level, particularly out of the SSDP office, and we do it in coordination with our chapters at the grassroots level. So at the give you an example of this, our flagship has been the Higher Education Act Aid Elimination Penalty. This is a law that denies federal financial aid to any student with a drug conviction. Being the student movement, I think we're probably the most credible organization to sort of take the lead on this issue. And so we have a full-time lobbyist in our national office, Tom Angel, who is an SSDP alumni himself. And, you know, having a lobbyist who is young, who is very close to student age himself, I think makes us probably a more effective advocate for this particular issue than even an organization like Normal or the Drug Policy Alliance or Marijuana Policy Project or so forth, where they can say, you know, your motives are otherwise. So this is an issue that we have really taken the lead on. And again, we have a lobbyist, but we also have built a coalition of organizations around the country through the CHEER Coalition, which we've done with the Drug Reform Coordination Network, that includes health organizations, treatment organizations, higher ed, civil rights, civil liberties, financial aid, religious groups, et cetera. And we've brought them all together. It's a coalition of over 350 groups that have called for Congress to repeal this penalty. And at the grassroots level, we use our chapters to essentially assist our efforts in Congress. We have student advocates on campus who are raising awareness of this issue for students all over the country. And to date, over 125 student governments, mostly through the work of SSDP and Normal chapters, have passed resolutions calling on Congress to repeal this penalty. So that when we go to Congress and we send our young lobbyists to Congress, he can say, look, students across the country are united in opposing this law. That gives us a hell of a lot more credibility when we talk about this with members of Congress. And on that note, if you weren't here earlier when I made the announcement, we have these postcards. And if you haven't filled one of these postcards out, it's got a picture of a sad young woman on it who's been denied her financial aid for college because of a drug conviction. Congress is going to be taking up this issue. The House, I should say, is going to be taking up this issue in the next couple of months. Please stop by the SSDP table at the exhibitor area. Fill out your name and address and give it back to us, and we're going to personally hand deliver about 12,000 of these filled-out postcards in a hill drop in a couple of weeks. So if you haven't done so, please do so before you leave here at the end of this weekend. Other issues that we've sort of taken the lead on include student drug testing. Our lobbyist lobbies Congress to try and cut funding, federal funding for student drug testing. The federal government has actually made millions of dollars in grant money available to school districts that want to implement random student drug testing for their students. This is not money that can be used for books or teachers or higher salaries or lower class sizes or whatever. It's just for drug testing programs. It's a no child's urine left behind, so to speak. And again, we get the students involved in this as well. In the grassroots level, the Office of National Drug Control Policy has been holding summits all across the country where they're trying to teach principals and school administrators, school board members, why they should implement these programs. And so we send our chapter members to these summits not to protest and not to raise hell, but to actually attend the summits and hand out information and talk to these administrators themselves and present the other side of the story from somebody who is just barely out of high school themselves, and in some cases actually in high school. We do have some chapters in high schools. In fact, there a chapter of Francis Parker High School in Chicago were probably the best advocates that we've had at any of these summits when it was held in Chicago a few years ago. We also work on the Office of National Drug Control Policy's media campaign. These are the anti-drug ads that are geared towards young people, you know, the ones that tell you if you smoke marijuana, you're going to run over a little girl on a bicycle or shoot your friend in the face or get your fist stuck in your mouth, or my personal favorite, that your girlfriend will run off with an alien. And it's hard to say without laughing. But it's just a funny aside on that one. When they finally put that out, I'm sure you've all seen it. It's a cartoon where, you know, the guy smokes a joint and his girlfriend says, you know, I'm tired of you or whatever, and this little alien comes down. The next thing you see, they're flying off together and heart bubbles going up over their head. It's quite creepy. So I actually sent an email to the official spokesperson from the ONDCP, Tom Riley. He and I actually have corresponded a few times. Mostly I'd like to give him a hard time because they refused to play our softball team in the Congressional Softball League, but... I sent him an email saying, you know, are you serious? I asked him flat out, did you guys honestly create this just to entertain marijuana smokers? He didn't respond, unfortunately. But anyway, so these are the kind of issues that I think that students really need to take the lead on. And we're about to, and I'd like to announce this here today, something else that we're going to be doing in this vein is for the next election cycle, we are about to launch an SSDP Political Action Committee. Thank you. This political action committee has really one goal, because it's the first time we've ever tried this, and we have one singular goal and one singular target. The PAC is not going to be involved in the presidential race. I don't have any illusions of grandeur of being able to raise, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to really influence the presidential election. But our singular goal with the PAC is to defeat Mark Sauter, a Republican from Indiana, who's the author of the HEA elimination penalty. And this isn't just going to be giving money to his opponent, but we're planning on buying radio ads, local television ads if possible, and hopefully coordinating our message with his opponent, who has already raised about three times the amount of money that Mark Sauter has raised. He's a young, very moderate lawyer who's running as a Democrat, and Sauter is as vulnerable as he's ever been. So we hope to demonstrate that students and student drug policy activists can play a role in defeating some of the worst drug warriors in Congress. So if anyone's interested in getting involved in that or contributing to it, please come and talk to me at some point this weekend, and I'll be happy to fill you in a little bit more on that. So second track, as I was mentioning, SSDP as sort of foot soldiers. And I shouldn't say SSDP because they include normal chapters and ACLU chapters and other drug policy campus activists both at the high school and college level. And what we've really tried to do, and this is something that I think we've done a lot better in the last year and a half than SSDP has really done in the past, it's something that I've really prioritized, is we're working with other drug policy organizations to essentially avail our network of young activists, young students with time on their hands and a drive to work in drug policy, and we're essentially availing that network to other groups to help with their local campaigns. So we meet fairly regularly in person and on the phone with leaders of other drug policy organizations to find out, you know, where are you going to be running local campaigns, what are your priority states, and those become then our priority states for our outreach efforts. That's where we target our Facebook ads. We will sometimes send a staff member, for instance, Jacob Rowland in the back there. He's our outreach director, just got back from spending 2 weeks in Massachusetts organizing college students to help out with a decriminalization initiative that's going to be on the ballot in 2008. And I should say, while the locals and the national groups are all fighting over this initiative, we're working with both sides of it, which has been quite nice. And so our target states for outreach are based essentially on what other groups are looking for help with. And so to give you a few examples of that, I mentioned, you know, we've been working with the Marijuana Policy Project on getting new chapters started in Massachusetts and Nevada to help with initiatives there. We're working with the Drug Policy Alliance on some initiatives that they're, legislative initiatives that they're running in Alabama and in Louisiana. We're trying to get students to the to an upcoming conference, and so we're targeting Louisiana because DPA has asked us for help there. We've been working with Normal, particularly on the Higher Education Act. Ron and I just met a few weeks ago, and we sent out somewhere around 4,000 or so of these postcards. Again, sign one if you hadn't already done so. And we sent those out to Normal chapters just because, you know, Normal asked if we would send them, and we incurred the expense, and we sent them to the Normal chapters. We're working with the ACLU on helping to restore voting rights to ex-felons who have been disenfranchised. We work with Common Sense for Drug Policy, distributing drug war facts to all SSDP chapters all over the country. We actually just had a conversation with some of the members of ASA about getting more involved with the medical marijuana efforts in California, and doing some targeted outreach to campuses in California. So we have students who are available as for response teams when medical marijuana clubs are raided. We've been working with the Open Society Institute on helping to get rid of the crack powder 100-to-1 federal sentencing disparity. And so I should say, you know, this is actually something I'm quite proud of, that I think SSDP is probably or arguably the only organization that really stays out of the sort of drug policy infighting, and really we work with everybody in drug policy, and I think that some of the so-called grown-up organization can learn a little bit from the kids in this respect. Yeah. And, you know, finally, again, the third track that I mentioned here, which is training the next generation of drug policy reform activists. And Students for Sensible Drug Policy has been, over the last 10 years, a pipeline for employment in drug policy. We have SSDP alumni who've gone on to work, obviously, in our national office, who've gone on to work for the Drug Policy Alliance, the Marijuana Policy Project, Americans for Safe Access, Normal, the Drug Reform Coordination Network. I mean, just about every major drug policy organization in the country has employed SSDPers. And so we're trying to get more tactical in the way that we train our students when they're still in college so that they're more prepared to go on and work on policy change, both in the local level or for another national organization. And we designed a campaign about a year and a half ago to do that called the Campus Change Campaign. And this is a campaign that's designed to help students change what we consider bad drug policies on their campuses, and we give them the tools to do that. Some of these policies include lowering marijuana penalties to equal those for underage drinking. Both are illegal, and yet in most campuses, if you get caught drinking, you get a slap on the wrist. If you get caught with marijuana, you get kicked out of the dorms, expelled, and a whole host of draconian penalties. Not evicting students from their dorms for a marijuana possession offense or a first-time drug offense. Not suspending students from school altogether for a first-time drug offense. Not calling the police, local police, in to deal with a minor drug possession or marijuana possession offense and dealing with it internally. Trying to provide adequate representation for students who are busted and have to go through the student judicial system, and making sure that there's a student advocate, some cases a law student, who are available to represent them in this judicial process. We're actually about to launch one which focuses on racial disparity in campus drug law enforcement, and that's something that we're going to be working with the Open Society Institute on, and one that I'm particularly, I wouldn't say necessarily proud of, but I think has gained a lot of traction on college campuses, is something called a Good Samaritan policy or a medical amnesty policy, which says that if a student is overdosing on drugs or alcohol, and granted about 95%, if not more, of these are alcohol cases, but if a student's overdosing on any substance, that they or their friend more likely can call campus security to get that student help, to save their life, and that they won't be punished then for the underlying crime.
That was Chris Crane, the director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, speaking on the Activist Toolbox breakout panel at the 2007 Normal Conference. We got a chance to catch up with Chris right after this panel and interview there at the 2007 Normal Conference.
In Los Angeles. Chris, this has turned out to be quite a gathering of this movement here this weekend. Are you surprised so many people came out here to the West Coast to Los Angeles for the conference?
No, not really, actually. Normal always does an amazing job of turning out both the sort of rank-and-file drug policy activists and also just cannabis consumers who are particularly interested in the issue. And certainly California is about as cannabis-friendly as you get in the country. So not too surprised to see a good turnout here. Normal's quite good with that.
Righto. You mentioned in one of your talks that Students for Sensible Drug Policy really works with all the different drug policy reform groups. Drug Policy Alliance, the Marijuana Policy Project, Normal, and other groups, of course, mm-hmm. out there. All of them are here today. I mean, we've got Ethan Nailman, the director of DPA. Rob Campy is here today, too. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a unique event here. It really is the first time I know all of them coming together in this way.
It's pretty rare to see everybody coming together like this. I mentioned in my presentation yesterday that SSDP really prides itself on working with just about everybody in the movement. Part of my philosophy with the organization is that we have this large network of grassroots activists, college students in our case, who are really dying to work on substantive drug policy issues, beyond stuff just on their campus, which is largely what we give them to work on. So we've made a strategic decision to work with the leadership of other drug policy organizations to let them know that if they have a campaign that they're going to be running in a local area, that they should come and talk to us, and we will base our targeted outreach states on where other organizations are going to be running these campaigns. And so we've been doing this with groups like the Marijuana Policy Project and the Drug Policy Alliance, Normal, Americans for Safe Access, the ACLU, the Open Society Institute. We're literally working with all of these organizations on a number of different campaigns and trying to give our students something to work on to help them in their campaigns. And so I think, as I said yesterday, SSDP seems to be the only organization in drug policy that I know of that really works effectively with just about every other organization and stays entirely out of the infighting. And I think some of the so-called grown-up organizations out there can really learn a little bit from the kids in that respect.
Righto. SSDP has been working on a lot of campus initiatives, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has to do with reprioritizing marijuana priorities with the campus law enforcement and other groups over there. You know, how important is that to student activism to see that change right there on their campus?
I think it's incredibly important. You know, most of our activists obviously get their start on college campuses, some on high school campuses, but you know, what we're trying to do is really train the next generation of drug policy reformers. And so part of our philosophy is that if we can get them to run a successful campaign and to change an actual policy on campus, a bad campus drug policy, or to enact a good campus drug policy, that serves as a really good training for reform at the local level, the state level, the national level, and it makes them much more prepared to go on to potentially work for, you know, one of these other national drug policy organizations. So what we've done is we've created a campaign that gives students tools to run these campaigns and to bring about these changes. And there are a number of different campaigns that we work on that we've given them the tools to work on. And those include lowering marijuana penalties to equal penalties for underage drinking on campus, not evicting students from university housing for minor drug possession offenses or marijuana possession offenses, to have universities not call local police onto campus to deal with marijuana possession offenses, and rather to deal with it internally and have them go through the student, you know, student conduct center judicial process on campus, where they, you know, they may be punished within the university, but they're not going to receive a criminal record, lose their financial aid, have trouble getting jobs and everything else that comes with a criminal conviction. Our big push recently, and the one that I think university administrators are most receptive to, is something we call a Good Samaritan policy. And that is essentially a policy that states if a student is overdosing on drugs or alcohol, and most of these admittedly are alcohol cases, that they, or more likely their friends, can call campus security to get help. So that it can get help for them without either them or their friends being punished for the underlying offense, either underage drinking or drug possession. It's a real life-saving policy, and a lot of administrators have been very open to the idea. We're really pushing medical amnesty, or I should say Good Samaritan policies, for two reasons. One, it actually saves the lives of students on campuses, and there's really not much that you can do that's more important than saving lives and you know, employing a real harm reduction approach to substance use. But at the same time, it also allows the students to get in good with their administration. If they start with, you know, trying to lower penalties for marijuana possession, you know, they can be sort of pigeonholed as, oh, whether the stoner group on campus and the university is kind of, the university administration feels like, you know, they're being backed into a corner, and it can create a sort of adversarial relationship. Whereas if they're working with the administration on enacting a policy that saves lives on campus, then they're seen as you know, much more respectable. They've proven that they really are interested in the safety of their fellow students, and they're not just interested in getting high. And then once they've made those relationships and these working relationships with the administration, and they have that credibility, they're much more likely to work on other campus drug policies that may be a little bit more controversial.
Now, also, too, October now. Students have been on campus for a little while. They've had weeks to come back, readjust from the summer break and everything like that. A lot of activity is really starting up. What do you think is really, what campuses do you think you're going to see the most activity on in this area this year?
Oh, it's tough to say. I mean, we've got a number of campuses that are working on these medical amnesty policies. Mm-hmm. A few have just passed within the last few months: University of Georgia, University of Connecticut. William and Mary passed one that was alcohol only, but I expect that by the end of the semester, that program is going to be expanded to all drugs as well. The University of Central Florida is very close to getting a Good Samaritan policy enacted. It's gone through most of the hoops. It's just got a couple of administrative steps that they still got to go through there. Those have been terrific. And at the University of Maryland, they've been engaged in a two-year campaign to stop the university from evicting students from the dorms who were caught for first-time marijuana possession offenses. They got student government resolution passed. They got a resolution through the Residence Hall Association Senate. They actually passed an initiative on campus where the student body voted, I think, 66% in favor of this. They even got a state senator from the state of Maryland to write the administration urging them to enact this change. They actually haven't done it yet, but they did have a minor victory recently when the administration, while not changing the classification of marijuana, are now allowing the residence directors, who are largely grad students, to decide whether or not they're they're going to evict somebody for a first-time offense. And the SSDP chapter there is now engaged in a public education campaign with the RAs, the residence assistants, teaching RAs that they don't have to call local police in when they smell marijuana. They're actually instructed to do so, but under the University of Maryland Conduct Code, they don't have to do that. And so they're educating the RAs that they don't have to do this and trying to get them to not call police for minor marijuana offenses. So there's stuff going on all over the country, and we're really excited. I think by the end of this school year, I hope to have at least 10 new, new good campus policies enacted or bad campus policies rolled back. I think that's a realistic goal, and I'm optimistic that we're going to make that by the end of the school year.
It's a lot of reform. Mm-hmm. Also, what's interesting about the student groups and Students for Sensible Drug Policy is that you also have to have professors moderate the groups in order for mm-hmm. the club to form on campus. So in a lot of ways, it's also empowering a lot of academia out there. It's empowering mm-hmm. a lot of professors to get involved with drug policy reform and really work with students on the issue. It really is an interesting dynamic to that. I mean, do you hear back at SSDP office from the professors who moderate these groups? Do you have some interaction?
At times we do. You know, to be perfectly honest, it varies to a great degree, the level of involvement that the faculty advisors have mm-hmm. in the chapters. I'd say in many cases, they simply sign their name as an advisor on the, on their the paperwork to get approved by the university, and then they never really hear from them again. Mm-hmm. It's somebody that says, yeah, I agree with you, but I don't really have the time to, get active in this. And then we have some professors who are very active and really mm-hmm. provide some guidance. And, some of them were already involved. We have a chapter at the University of Massachusetts Lowell, where Keith Saunders, who's actually the president of MassCan Normal, is also a sociology professor at UMass Lowell, and so he's become the faculty advisor for the SSDP chapter there. Some very well-known, well-renowned drug policy academics, Craig Reinerman at UCLA, as a major example, Peter Reuter at the University of Maryland. These are people of major drug policy research that's been published, peer-reviewed, and so forth, act as faculty advisors for our chapters at those universities. So we really sort of run the gamut from professors who are just like, yeah, I agree, here's my signature, go for it, to really well-respected drug policy academics who get very actively involved, and everything in between.
Do you think that these campuses also affect when you have campus reform and very active campus groups that it reaches out to the wider community, and especially in towns that are known sort of as college towns, that have a large university or college in town, the town itself might be small?
Yes. In fact, we've had a few instances where the SSDP chapters, and in most of these cases it was actually in conjunction with campus groups of Normal and ACLU at times, get together and actually take their activism beyond the campus into their communities. The probably the best example of this took place in Columbia, Missouri, where the local SSDP chapter, along with the Normal and ACLU chapter there, ran two initiatives a couple of years ago. Actually, I think it was in 2004, one of which called for the city to protect medical marijuana patients from arrest. The second called on the city to treat marijuana possession as the lowest law enforcement priority for the city of Columbia. Both of those passed quite overwhelmingly, actually. And those were entirely student-run initiatives within their town, which is largely a college town. We're now seeing that going on, of all places, in Joplin, Missouri,
yeah.
Where we've got a case where you've actually got two brothers, Kyle and Kelly Matty. Kelly Matty is in his mid-20s, and he runs Joplin Normal, the local Normal chapter, and Kelly Matty runs the local SSDP chapter at the university mm-hmm. there at Southern Missouri State University. And they're now running an initiative in Joplin, Missouri, that would make marijuana law enforcement the lowest law enforcement priority for Joplin. We also saw students involved in a Normal SSDP chapter just last year that ran an initiative in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, that made marijuana enforcement the lowest law enforcement priority for Eureka Springs. So we actually are seeing students who mostly have gotten their training through working on campus drug policies then take those skills, those lobbying skills and campaign skills that they learned at the campus level, and take them out into the community and actually have changed policy and protected marijuana users and medical marijuana patients from arrest and prosecution in their towns.
Righto. Well, Chris, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you having to join us today.
It's always a pleasure, and happy to do it anytime.
That was our interview with Chris Crane, the director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. We conducted that interview at the 2007 Normal Conference. The Complete Activist Toolbox panel is available on the Normal Events podcast. You can find that online at normal.org/podcast, and we have links at normalaudiostash.com. Complete speeches, photographs, videos, and you can even purchase DVDs from the 2007 Normal Conference. We have links to it all right up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. In tomorrow's show, we'll have our regular news segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine on science covering tinctures of cannabis. And in the program tomorrow, we'll speak with Rick Cusick, the first of two interviews covering the Cannabis Cup, which went down in Amsterdam last week, the 20th annual Cannabis Cup, a well-attended event. Happy Americans all in Europe last week. And Thursday and Friday, we'll speak with Danielle and Richard at Oaksterdam University as they train people to work in California's cannabis industry. Another great week of programming here on your Audio Stash Normals Daily Audio Stash. Make sure you tune in every day. You've been listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.